Welcome back to Relative Dimensions, the Doctor Who podcast on CrazyFanboy.com. I'm your host, as always, Terrence Newsom. These are what I like to call the solo years, as it's going to be just me from now on. Just to get you a little idea about the format, this episode is going to be a different format, because the first half I'm going to run through and rate the final six or seven episodes of Series 8 of Doctor Who. I meant to do that before some things came up, so it's been a little bit of a hiatus, but I want to cover those for you, what I feel and think about them. It's not going to be as extensive as I would have liked. It's going to be more of a run-through, but the second half you'll enjoy, because it's going to be covering the Ice Warriors DVD with reconstruct animated episodes, and after that I'm going to, the next podcast will be Enemy of the World, followed by Web of Fear, and we're going to be a lot more regular since I'm solo now, and scheduling conflicts won't get in the way. But let's get to the final half of Capaldi's Series 8, Kill the Moon. Kill the Moon was the next episode after Caretaker. Kill the Moon, I would give a 2 out of 5. I just feel the spider monsters were weak. The kid and kid character in Doctor Who's never good. Adric, anyone? It just never works. And whereas Capaldi was good in this one, he was very doctorly, I think the episode was filler, quite frankly. And there's a couple other ones here I also fear were filler. Mummy on the Orient Express, is easily a 5 out of 5. One of the best of the series. Not the best, maybe, but one of the best. Reminds me of the old Philip Hinchcliffe era, Tom Baker episodes like Talons of Wang Chiang, and Horror on Fang Rock and all that, even though that was Graham Williams, I guess, technically, but I think he had a little bit to do with that, at least maybe he had worked on that before he left. I don't know, it just reminds me of those Victorian episodes in the Tom Baker era. Stylistically, it's totally new and fast-paced and different, of course, unfortunately, but it was quite enjoyable. The mummies were effective and creepy, and the mystery was effective and creepy, and I like how Capaldi's doctor is, unfazed by the deaths around him. He's more about solving the mystery and knowing there's nothing he can do about it until he gets an answer and solves the mystery. Flatline is the other filler episode I was talking about. That's the next episode following Mummy. Easily a number 2. Whereas the aliens were original for this, you know, I mean, they were cool, I'll admit, but Shadows Coming Off Walls, it's just a little too close to Moffat's Varash. I can never say that word. Nashta Varada, or Vashta Varada, however you say it, the shadow things in the first River Song episode. Other than that, I didn't get much out of this episode or see it progressed Series 8 much. Up next was In the Forest of the Night, which is mixed bag, because I really love what they did with it, and then, on the other hand, it just wasn't good like it should have been. It just wasn't executed well, maybe, or the idea of setting up a scenario with a antagonist that's not particularly evil, it just happens to be doing what it's doing as a part of nature, sort of, was really cool. But just far too much was confusing about it, and it didn't really work as an episode. Like when the little girl's sister comes back, did anyone really catch that exactly? Maybe they did. Maybe it's just me. I don't know. But I just felt that it harkened back to those Hartnell episodes where the first season especially, where they're just trying stuff, and that's for Series 8 as a whole. They really tried to do new things, and that's what I liked about it. Even if it didn't always work, it was fun to see what they were trying to do. After that is the first part of the season finale, Dark Water. Dark Water and Death in Heaven, so the first part is called Dark Water. The first part I really enjoyed, definitely a 4 out of 5. I absolutely loved Missy's The Master. It just shows how much The Master... It's a little continuity of The Master where people don't see that maybe John Sims' Master didn't... it didn't come into your mind or think about it like that. Because he was probably, you know, aping Tennant a little bit. Because I always feel The Master will... How do you put it? The Master generally always mirrored the Doctor. So John Pertwee's Master was the Moriarty to his Sherlock Holmes, and Anley's Master was kind of the wacky you know, time traveling eccentric, to Tom Baker's wacky time traveling eccentric. So they matched each other. Of course, when you get into Peter Davison and Sylvester McCoy, Ainley wasn't exactly their equals, but I think it always follows that. So John Sims is kind of like the crazy and wacky Tenet Doctor's master. And Missy's older, but I feel she did a great job. I feel they should have taken out some of the John Smith wackiness and done it a little more. She wasn't sane, and that was great about it, because you see at this point the Master switching bodies, and who knows where he's at his regeneration cycle. Does he have one? He's totally another world than the Doctor as far as that goes, and as far back as the Ainley Master you saw, and I think that was the point of the Ainley Master, was you saw it's kind of made him insane. So I think that her portrayal was along the lines with that and followed that and was good. But I think a little more of the evil side of her would have worked better. Perfect example is the scene where she kills Osgood, and thank God. If Osgood is meant to represent all that's wrong with Doctor Who fandom and cosplayers and all that stuff, and for us older fans, I mean, maybe that's going to touch a nerve people don't like, and I'm sorry, but it was great to see her die. Her scene with that, which was generally chilling and evil, like, that's how she should have been more, because that would be the perfect companion piece to Capaldi's type of Doctor. So, because of Missy being so good, and, the setup for that episode being so good, I give that a 4 out of 5. The second half, Death in Heaven, it all falls apart, and we never really find out why, Missy's been collecting dead people, but why is the robot? Why did she collect the robot from Deep Breath? I have no idea. It doesn't really add up based on what she was doing. She means she turned him into a Cyberman or something? I don't get it. Maybe I'm just remembering it wrong. I don't know. But and then a Cyber Brigadier, I mean, as cool as that was and as giddy as I got as an old series fan, like, it was, overall, let's admit it, it was kind of silly and stupid. I mean, really. Danny Pink scene where he saves the Earth as a Cyber Pink or whatever you want to call him. And the Doctor just calls him P.E. It's just great, because that Doctor has no respect or any idea of what being human is like, and that's the great thing about Capaldi's Doctor. So overall, the episode to me was a 2, though. It was really bad, and it didn't live up to the build-up of Dark Water that Dark Water gave it. The end half where Capaldi and Clara, lie to each other, basically, to not hurt each other is classic. That's like a Sarah Jane, Tom Baker type relationship and a Fourth Doctor relationship, and it's great. It just, that's what works. Those are the type of companions that work. And I equal, as far as new series goes, I equal the emotional depth of that scene to the end of Deep Breath, where he says, "I'm standing right in front of you and you can't even see me." Like, to me, that's a great scene. One of the greatest scenes in the new series, or Series 8, and so is this. Of course, we find out that short-lived, and Clara would be back for Last Christmas, which I never look forward to the Christmas episodes. I mean, I do, because it's Doctor Who, and it's fun to watch Doctor Who, but they're always bad. Let's face it. Can you name one good one? Can't think of any. Last Christmas is probably the worst. Ridiculous, silly scenario. Great seeing Nick Frost playing Santa Claus. That's kind of a classic name. Meaning there, but I give it 1 out of 5. Overall, I give Series 9, for its originality and what it did, 5 out of 5. Sorry, Series 8, 5 out of 5, easy. Well, I don't know about Series 9 yet, so I'm kind of jumping the gun there. Hopefully Series 9 is a 6 out of 5, no. But Series 8 is easily 5 out of 5, just because they tried different things, and that's what Doctor Who used to be about, and I'm glad they kind of took it back to that. So the second half of the podcast, we're going to be reviewing the recent DVD release of The Ice Warriors, of Patrick Troughton, Season 5. Serial introduced Brian Hale's turtle-like lumbering Martians. I've been kind of doing a personal re-evaluation, re-watching personally, not to review necessarily, Season 5. So again, I've seen Tube of Cybermen a million times, and I think me and Nolan covered that a while back on Relative Dimensions. I watched the reconstruction, the loose cannon reconstruction of The Abominable Snowman, which was great. Very creepy, and it actually moved along. I thought it was going to be fairly boring when you have those back and forth there, in one set type of thing, but that one was really good. next on that list was The Ice Warriors, and I happened to get the DVD of that, the recently released DVD of that, with the two animated episodes added in place of episode 2 and 3, which are missing and have not been found, along with Enemy of the World, which had been completely found, and the one after that, which actually follows sequentially, serial-wise, Web of Fear. So, The Ice Warriors has never been one of my favorite Patrick Troughton adventures. Certainly not my least favorite. That might be quite possibly Dominators, maybe. That's never been another one of my favorites. But as far as, you know, the ones I have seen, not counting Reconstructions, The Ice Warriors has never been my favorite. I just felt it was a little too slow. It had a lot of potential, and it has sort of that thing from another world angle where they're bringing in the monster and the in the ice block, the, you know, the who goes there type of scenario. But I just felt like that this was what I thought Abominable Snowman was going to be. A lot of running back and forth between the Ice Warrior ship and the weather base and all that stuff. The Ice Warriors were great, don't get me wrong. As an original design for Martians, we've seen so many, from H.G. Wells to, you know, the movie ideas of what Martians with Big Heads looks like. For Brian Hales, the writer, to come up with this totally original idea of these kind of like almost crustaceous turtle-type things that hiss and are really creepy is brilliant. So they're great to look at. As far as menace goes on an actual physical threat level, they can shoot you and kill you, and they are big and lumbering, but they just didn't... They didn't show that much. Like, they weren't very threatening. They hid in their ship, they were afraid to come out, and when they did, they were good. But I just think there could have been more to that. Story-wise, again, I think it was too slow, but it was an interesting idea, and maybe at the time, it was probably one of the first base under siege things. You know, this is the season where that base under siege thing started with Troughton's era. Acting-wise, Patrick Troughton is good as always as the Doctor. I mean, you see, especially in this one, all the little... I don't know why this one in particular, but this is the one it really hit me with. Maybe just more recently when I watched all the little nuances that Matt Smith took from his Doctor to and add to his 11th Doctor was all for Patrick Troughton, and you could see it. I mean, of course, the bow tie, but just the little ways he answers certain questions and the way his little inflections. It's just, you see a lot of it in Matt Smith. Jamie and Victoria are great to me. They're still my, you know, I don't want to say my favorite Patrick Troughton companion combo, because that's probably Zoe and Jamie, I think, were better. But they're one of my favorites. The rest of the cast, can I say they were actually good? No, Storr was good. The guy who played Storr, which is Angus Lenny, which you might remember as the Irish or Scottish caretaker in Terror of the Zygons. He's always good as the... savage, or not savage, but hermit that's taking care of Penley. The guy who plays Arden is okay. He's pretty good. He's hardly in it. He's the guy who finds the Ice Warrior body and ship. Miss Garrett, she's a basic 60s robotic type actor. I mean, she's supposed to be kind of like a human computer, so that works, but nothing standoutable. Leader Clint, which is Peter... Barkworth, way over the top. I don't even quite understand what he thought his character was supposed to be. The best I can gauge is that, you know, he was playing Clint almost as if a really nervous guy who relied on the computer, and he kind of, you know, didn't know how to do anything, so when he's posed the question that's not like a, you know, question he can ask the computer, he's very nervous and screams a lot because he's so anxious, and I don't know. I just don't quite get his character. Definitely, to me, over the top. So if his character was a certain way, I didn't get it, and he was trying to play it that way, maybe that's why I don't understand it. I think he wasn't as, you know, maybe restrained as he should be. The serial was directed by Derek Martinus, which we all know directed countless classic Doctor Who episodes that are lost. Some aren't. Galaxy 4 is lost. Evil of the Daleks is lost, although you can't watch the Loose Cannon Reconstruction on YouTube and Daily Motion and stuff, which I have, and it's quite brilliant. It's easy to watch that way, and it's fun, and, I mean, to me, it's one of my favorite serials. I kind of wish, yeah, of course, you know, we had the actual episode itself, but I digress. Bernard Breslau, who played Varga, which is the main Ice Warrior I meant to bring up, sorry to go back to the actors, brilliant. Probably the best Ice Warrior you'll ever see, aside from the guy playing him in Ice Warrior Commander in, or Ice Lord, rather, in Seeds of Death. But back to Derek Martinez, directed a lot of Spearhead from Space, another classic. Dudley Simpson's score is brilliant. It's a very haunting, operatic kind of female banshee vocal, as you could call it. But it really goes with the ice setting, and set-wise, it wasn't too bad. They didn't have a lot of money, you could tell, and they they economically used some old Victorian-type house as the main weather base thing, which is classic, because they make mention of it and they put it into the story, so it really worked. It's like, this is a classic house that's still renovated, and, you know, we're using it, and it's from the classic era of Earth, so that was really cool, and they used that effectively. The Ice Warrior ship, you didn't see much of. What you did see was effective enough. The fake ice caves actually were pretty effective, which they aren't always in Doctor Who. Of course, in those black and white ones, they look a lot more effective, obviously, than in color, when you can't, you know, hide the white not looking natural and a little off-white like ice would. So I would overall give Ice Warriors a 5 out of... take that back. I'm going to give it a 4 out of 5, because you're probably wondering why I'm giving it so high at all, my review, but it's got classic Troughton, and he's perfect as the Doctor in this. A great companion team. The Ice Warriors, the idea of it is great. It's just it did need to be 6 parts, I think, is the whole problem. But I think it's easily still a 4 out of 5. Next time I'm going to cover Enemy of the World here in Relative Dimensions, and if you guys have any thoughts on that, or the Ice Warriors, or any of the controversial comments I made about the second half of Series 8 with Capaldi, write us me at Terrence@crazedfanboy.com, and we'll air your letters here on Relative Dimensions next time. In the meantime, you know, read your Doctor Who, gear up, because Series 9 is on the way.